welcome to Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. It's good to be with you again this week. Welcome to the program. It's spring break in most of Oklahoma, probably a good chunk of the country at large. And we are here in the Democracy Den, giving you a little bit of an update on the legislative session thus far. I am joined today by our my stand-in co-host and our current research and policy fellow, Ava Woodall. Hello, Ava.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
Thanks for being back again this week. Ava is a freshman at UCO, right? I don't think we really did a full bio last week. Ava, tell us a little bit about you. You're going to school, what your major is, how you got into politics and government stuff.
So I am a freshman at UCO. I am currently undecided. So after I complete my bachelor's, I will transfer to a college with an agricultural program just because that is a huge passion of mine. But
and you like own, you've got a horse, right?
Yes, I do. I
think you may be the second guest ever on the show that owned a horse.
Yes, yes. I am actively rodeo, and I'm actually about to start my season coming up here in a couple weeks.
That's a baller. I actively rodeo. That's something that I can't
say. It's a fun thing to flex.
You would appreciate knowing that in 2018 or so, we had former state auditor Gary Jones on the program. He's from the southwestern part of the state, and he called in to discuss, it might have been before that, but he called in to discuss something to do with the budget, I think, or some audit, and he called in from his like pasture, and like you could hear cows mooing in the background.
That is so funny.
I was like, I may go find that episode and insert an audio clip if I can do it. That was it was a fun phone call. Well, Ava, we're excited for you to be here with us for today's episode, and more broadly, you've been already a big help around the office. So, listeners, we are roughly one half the way through the legislative session in approximate terms. So maybe, Ava, let's start with like a little bit of an overview refresher on the legislative process for any new listeners, and then we'll kind of get into where some stuff is at now. So when we started the session back in February, there were roughly 3,200 bills that were alive. Some of them were from this year and some were carried over from last year. That's a lot of legislation floating around.
Yeah.
And after the, so everything gets assigned to a committee in their respective chambers, House and Senate. And then, you know, then they had a bunch of committee meetings, committee hearings for the first month or so. And then around the end of February was the first legislative deadline. And that deadline is bills out of committee in their chamber of origin. After that deadline, we were down to about 1,900 bills. So not quite half, but like a big chunk had already kind of died. Mm-hmm. And I will say a caveat here that I will probably reiterate in this episode, and that is that no bill is presumed dead. Well, no bill is fully dead. Mostly dead. No bill is totally dead unless, well, the legislature like adjourns sine die at the end of May, or that language has been voted down. So like if there was a, if it was heard in committee and they voted and it was more no's than yays, or if it's on the floor and that if it was voted down, they kind of consider that language dead. That's in their rules. There are still some cases where they can like change a couple of words and bring it back.
Of course. Yeah.
But generally that's dead. So that doesn't happen very often, right? Like if they hear a bill, usually cause they know it's going to pass. But if a bill doesn't make it past a particular deadline, then I guess it is presumed dead.
Yes.
Again, not always the case. And as we'll discuss later, sometimes new bills get filed halfway through the session. Who knows? So I would guess, I don't have a total count. I rely on Sean Ashley from Quorum Call for these kinds of digits. But I would guess that we're probably down to around, you know, 1,000-ish bills now.
Yeah.
And as we got towards this last floor deadline, so last week was the second deadline. This is kind of the halfway point, right? Where bills have passed committee, they have then passed the floor in their chamber of origin. And then they cross over to the opposite chamber for this next stage where they go mm-hmm. through committee and through the floor again, and then it goes to the governor's desk. And there was a lot of consternation by some members of the Senate, some of the more conservative members of the Senate, specifically Senators Nathan Dom and newly elected Senator Dusty Devers from Lawton, who have put out several press releases this week, really angry at the pro tem about not hearing enough bills. I guess one day last week, they were trying to like kind of filibuster, like they were reading hundreds of pages of things to prevent the Senate from hearing bills. And this was, so here's what happened. I think the Senate wasn't hearing some of their bills. And so in response, they slowed the process down so the Senate couldn't hear other bills.
Yes.
But if
yes.
if your complaint is that you're not hearing enough bills, throwing gasoline on the fire is not getting more bills heard. That analogy fell apart, but you know what I mean.
Of course. No, you're good.
It's like, well, if two wrongs don't make a right, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess we're down to like 1,000-ish bills now, which is pretty on track. And we usually, well, maybe like 1,200 or something. And I think, you know, in a typical session, 300 to 400 bills get signed into law. So I think we're on track for most other years. This week, so the legislature moved up that floor deadline by about a week so that it fell before spring break this year. In years past, it often fell like the week after, which then sometimes the legislators were still around on spring break or felt like they couldn't go somewhere with their kids. And also, in years past, the legislature, I think, skewed older. And so there was probably less legislators who were taking spring breaks.
Of course.
But now they got younger, a few younger legislators. They maybe have younger families. And so by wrapping up before spring break, it really kind of gives this like dead week in between. And that provides, I think, some breathing room for everybody, which is helpful. Session gets tense, especially the later in session we get. But this also allows for some like administrative time. It makes me think of, you know, in school, right? Like your teachers have like their planning period.
Yes.
This is kind of a planning period for the House and Senate leadership. Yes. So this week on, I think, Monday and Tuesday, there's some activity at the Capitol and the Senate. At least the Senate, I know, assigned their bills. So the bills from the House that have crossed over, the Senate leadership assigned those out to the Senate committees. And as always, not every bill gets assigned. Like some of them, they come in, like that chamber receives the bills. The floor leader, their designee, looks at them and says, okay, we're going to assign these, and we're not even going to mess with these because we don't have time or we don't want to, or the politics don't work out in this chamber the same. So they kind of push it aside. And so it's been interesting to kind of like, I think for a lot of us, start checking in. Ava, you were in a meeting with us on Friday with some other partner organizations discussing these bills. And at that time, all we knew was these are the bills that are still alive, and these are the ones that we are presumed dead after the deadline. But now, just a week later, we have a little more insight to be like, hey, some of these bills that we thought were alive last week can probably be presumed to be dead this week.
Yeah.
But as we said earlier, we don't want to count our chickens before they hatch, right? Maybe they just haven't got to them yet. Maybe they're holding them back.
That's the hope.
Right. We'll see. So I think that's kind of where we're at now. I haven't seen that the House has assigned the Senate bills that came over to the House committees yet. I imagine Leader Eccles is working on that this week or this weekend. And that'll be done before they come back on Monday, when I think both chambers are expected to gavel back in. Ava, I know that you are a college student who has been like peripherally, is that a word? Periphery? I can't even say it if it is.
Peripherally?
Oh, there you go. You got it. Since clearly the future is here.
That's right.
If you've been engaged on the periphery of politics for a while, I know that you pay attention to some of this stuff, and as you and I were kind of doing a news roundup this morning, are there particular issues or bills that you have been watching? If not, that's okay, but I want to give you a chance.
I haven't been watching, I don't think, anything in particular.
This, and I will say, like, this year, it's not that it's been better than in the past. It's been just as bad or worse in terms of, like, bad legislation. And there have been some definitely, like, targeted attacks on certain communities and certain people, but it's felt ever so slightly less prickly this year.
Which is nice. It's nice to...
Yeah, I'll take it. I suspect that has to do with it being an election year.
Yes.
And that cuts both ways, though, right? Like, some people will file bills simply to file them, simply for the headline of, like, oh, you know, so-and-so filed this outrageous bill. And then other folks don't want to talk about legislation because they don't want, like, they don't want their name associated with that, with that heinous bill or whatever. And so I think we see that, like, kind of bubble of news, of press coverage, like, in January and early February when all these bills are filed.
Yeah.
Even December when they're really trying to be like, oh, my gosh, look at this. Like, it is terrible. But then once the process starts and we don't hear from those bills anymore because leadership, cooler heads prevail, that kind of dies down. But now as we move into March, and it'll be April here very soon.
Very, very soon, yes.
We start talking more about the budget process. And so on, listeners, for you, I know sometimes in years past we've had big lists of legislation that we were kind of monitoring. This year for us, for Let's Fix This, we really tried to hone in on bills dealing with elections and democracy, including the initiative petition. We've talked about that. House Bill 1105 was it's authored by Speaker McCall and I believe Senator Julie Daniels, would make some pretty significant changes to the initiative petition process. It passed the floor last week. I haven't seen if it's been assigned anywhere in the Senate yet. But so some of those bills are still out there. The moment we hear anything, we'll send out an action alert. If there's an opportunity for action, we need your help. And other than that, I mean, compared to the last couple of years, there have been notably fewer, like, reactionary elections related bills. You know, in the wake of the 2020 election and allegations of voter fraud, which are all bogus. There was, like, this big, this big bunch of bills that came out about that. And that is not the case. Incidentally, Ava, I know you are, like me, are a fan of The West Wing.
Oh my gosh. Don't even get me started.
Have you ever watched the show The Newsroom?
I heard you talking about that the other day. And so whenever I get done rewatching The West Wing, that is the next on my list.
So listeners, if you are a West Wing aficionado, as many of you are, if you haven't watched The Newsroom, it's also on HBO Max. It's also by Aaron Sorkin. It was an HBO show. It was not on network TV. So the language is a little saltier. Back when HBO was, like, only for grown-ups.
It was very...
Home... Do you know what HBO stands for, Ava?
I don't.
I honestly didn't know this until a few months ago myself. Home Box Office. That's what it was originally stood for. It was because it was just for, like, movies. Back on, like, pay-per-view cable was a thing.
That fuzzy intro that they used to do.
That's right, yeah.
It's my favorite.
I should... Wish I had that as a sound effect now.
No, that'd be great.
Anyway, The Newsroom, excellent writing. If you've watched The West Wing at all, you will. There are, like, some dialogue that is very similar. Some of the issues are very similar, and it's basically set in a cable newsroom, a la Fox, MSNBC, CNN, and it's Jeff Daniels plays the main character, Will McAvoy. You've probably seen the opening clip from the first episode where he's on, like, a panel discussion and talks about why America is or isn't the greatest country in the world. It's a tremendous opening to the show. Overall, I don't, it's not as good as The West Wing, but it's really dealing with how does this fictional newsroom cover the Tea Party movement, right? So this is like in the late 2000s, post Obama's election in 2008, the rise of the conservative wing Tea Party movement, which I had almost forgotten about, weirdly.
Yeah.
And so watching it, and it reminds me of what's happening right now, right? Where you see this like more conservative wing of the Republican caucus. And they were Michelle Bachmann. Like they have clips. They have the cool things. They have clips from real life. So they have Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum and Rick Perry, all these people that were running for president, I guess in 2012. And they, Mitt Romney, and they, some of the rhetoric and the issues that they discuss on the show and like literally the actual people from real life are is the same rhetoric we hear today, including stuff about like election denialism and voter fraud and immigration, all this stuff. And once again, I know it's only been 10 or 15 years since then, so not quite as far back as the West Wing, but it is mind-boggling, one, that we fall for the same rhetoric, right? The same like kind of talking points where you're like, oh yeah, well this got your base fired up back then, we'll just try it out again.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild to me. Anyway.
No, it's incredible seeing how that party has, how both parties have developed over just the past decade.
Yeah.
With the things that just the American people, like, you know, if you have experienced over the past couple of years, I think that it's a good learning experience.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite episode of The West Wing?
Oh, gosh. That's a hard question.
It's hard to pick.
That's a really hard question. Oh goodness. Some of their later episodes I really do like when they start talking about like the election year coming up.
Oh, it's like when Santos is running for president.
Yes.
So after Bartlett's terming out, and
yes,
so those are the post Sorkin years after Aaron Sorkin left the show, and they had other writers come in.
But I do like some of those episodes. Those were a little fiery. So mix it up a little bit. But I don't think I could pick a favorite episode. But season one is probably my most favorite season.
Yeah,
I love it so much.
I love the show. It's like I love all my children. I will say season one for me is good, sometimes great. Season, the first couple, dozen or so episodes with Mandy, she drives me bananas, and I'm glad she wasn't an ongoing character.
Ooh, the first couple episodes, Mandy, I was like.
Oh, but she's like pulling up on the curb and on her car phone and all that is.
I'm like, you cannot get away with doing that type of stuff, being in the position that you were.
Yeah. She doesn't jive with the rest of the cast.
No, she was her own spirit.
I would say season one, episode like 19, which I think is Let Bartlett Be Bartlett. Like from that point on, I was in. I was sold.
Oh, yeah.
I think season two and three are my favorites. If I had to pick seasons, episodes that as much, I could just name a bunch that are really great. Yeah. Two cathedrals, right? Like all of the Christmas and Thanksgiving episodes.
The episode when the first daughter, I guess you could say, whenever she got kidnapped, and the response to that was a very, very spine crawling episode.
Yeah, In the Shadow of Two Gunmen, parts one and two. Those were all great.
Yeah, no, that was crazy.
Lots of good. In Excelsis Deo, a great Christmas episode.
Oh yes. Oh, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yep.
I as I've mentioned before, Scott and I are going to DC tomorrow, and it's going to be, as it always is, fun to like walk on some of, like we're going to go to the National Cathedral, which I've never been, but specifically I used to not care, but now because of the show, I'm like, you know what, I need to, that's on my list to go scoop it out. I need to learn some Latin so I can channel Bartlett's speech. Also, because of, here's an interesting fact, I read that because of the West Wing filming that scene, in this is in Two Cathedrals, right, where he's like, it was after Mrs. Landingham dies, and so he's like very angry at God, and like, you know, pursuant to previous conversations on this program here, right, religion is a big part of that president's life, but not a part of his like policy necessarily.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a personal, I don't know.
Yeah, but he, in that episode, he's like kind of yelling at God and speaking to him in Latin. And at the end of his kind of monologue there, maybe it's the beginning. Anyway, Bartlett like drops a cigarette and puts it out on the floor of the cathedral, which is symbolically like offensive. Well, it was offensive in real life too. Yeah. And because of that, the cathedral was like, okay, no more, no one else can film in here because we can't have you like desecrating this cathedral.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I thought was like, awesome and hilarious in a totally wrong way. Like it's like,
Funny for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, an interesting factoid as someone that's a fan of the show, but I also don't like anyone desecrating any religious places of any religion, personally. Anyway, now that we've gone way off onto a West Wing, our West Wing fanfic podcast, let's get back on track.
Give me a couple days and I'll be there with you. Don't worry.
Okay, well, before we move on then, where are you on the show right now?
I think I'm on... Oh, I just restarted season one again.
Oh, okay. So you're back in the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. No, I want to go way back and just binge the entire thing.
I do
again.
It again every 18 months or so. but then I usually get to like season three and get distracted by it. Feel like I should watch some other show. Yes. Also, I did hear that the new season of Formula One Drive to Survive just got released. So I may have to go watch that.
That's something else that you and I are going to.
Oh, good. Okay. Our separate.
Because that is one of my. I have been waiting for that season to come out for so long.
Really?
Because I used to be so into Formula One.
So, politics, horses, and Formula One racing. Okay.
Just a mix of, you know, different hobbies.
Kids today. Do you have a favorite character in the West Wing? This will be my last West Wing related question.
Janet. Her that's the actor's name. What's her last name?
Oh, the plays.
Or not Janet. I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking of Janet McCurdy. I was watching a documentary about her recently.
Okay.
But the speaker.
CJ Craig? Like the press secretary?
Yes, press secretary. Okay. I was thinking of somebody else for a second, but then I was like, I don't really like that.
Yeah, CJ's excellent character. The number of people I know that have children or pets named after CJ really cracks me up. That's great.
Miss
okay.
Craig.
Yes. Bartlett's my favorite, but I love them all. Ainsley Hayes, also excellent.
Yes.
And everyone else has grown on me. First time I watched it, couldn't stand Toby, and now I really like Toby.
No,
too.
Toby is good in all in ways that you would not expect.
Yeah, I thought it was a dick the first time, and then I realized like, oh no, he's just.
Once you realize like he just
cares
he's
a lot,
got a little bit of a hard shell. You just kind of you get a dig into his personality a little bit,
a little prickly. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back here in the Oklahoma legislature, I think probably the big thing that we're moving into is the budget. Generally, that starts coming up in late March, early April. The legislature tends to get through like all the policy issues and then they move on to the budget for the last couple of months. Some other states handle this differently. Like Texas, for example, has budget. Oh, I think it's Texas. Several states have budget only sessions. And then I was talking to somebody from some other state the other day where their legislature, they have a short session and a long session. Oh, it was New Mexico. And the short session is like budget only, and then the long session is everything else. But it's like 30 days and then 60 days. Their entire session is only a month. And I was like,
yeah, that's weird.
Oh my gosh. then you're like, why do we have this whole building just for like 30 days of meetings? Obviously, they do other stuff, but
yeah.
I mean, ours is only 4 months, but it still was kind of shocking to me of like, that's not much time to get work done. And I think they do work outside of that. And that's really like when they're in there doing votes and.
Yeah.
That kind of work.
Okay. Yeah.
Historically, what's happened here in Oklahoma is that each chamber starts kind of developing their budget behind closed doors. Maybe their appropriations and budget chair and the leadership kind of make their budget. And then they start having meetings. Members of the House, members of the Senate, members of the governor's office coming together. In some cases, under Governor Fallon's reign, there was famously a news report where they had all those people in the room, the state treasurer, the state auditor, like all those people in the room, the finance secretary, and they had like oil tycoon Harold Hamm on the phone. They were like calling and over the news story and all of us being like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, what's going on?
Why did they call him? You could have called me. I could have provided some input if you're just going to call constituents. Like, obviously, obviously there are reasons for that, but it was legitimately shocking that they would have, maybe it was a slip, but to openly say like, oh yeah, well, we called some of these like,
an incredibly biased point of view.
Yeah, like super wealthy donor guy, and to get his feedback on the budget. And it was about like gross production tax. Yeah. And I was like, if you're not calling every single business owner to ask them how this affects, like, why would you call this big one?
One person who right. makes
one or two
who's out of a statistic of like every other business owner. Right, yeah. You know?
Well, I think, and maybe like Larry Nichols from Devon was there too. Anyway, it's just, they pulled the curtain back for a little bit. Anyway.
Yeah.
This year, that's not how it's going. So the Senate announced early in session, and maybe it was even last year, that their plan was to have a more transparent budget process that didn't wait until the end of session. So okay. often in years past, they have those meetings, and because the legislature is not subject to the Open Meetings Act, they have those meetings privately, mm-hmm. often where... behind closed doors where no journalist or public is allowed in, and they hash out those details of a budget.
Yeah.
And then right at the end of session, they release the budget and they vote on it the next day, or they release it that morning. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in many cases, I can think of several years where legislators on the floor received the budget just a few hours before they were expected to vote on. And it is hundreds of pages long,
of course,
just lots of numbers. And so trying to go through and identify how much money each agency was going to receive takes like a lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
And in some cases, I can think of in like 2016, 2017, you know, the legislature passed a budget, adjourned sine die on like Thursday. It wasn't until the Sunday paper came out when the journalists had a chance to dig in and be like, oh my gosh, they zeroed out some of these agencies. Like, they just cut funding.
Yeah.
And in some cases, the legislature had to come back and be like, oh, whoops, we didn't mean to do that. Or like one of them, they gave an agency $30 million instead of $3 million, and they had to, like, well, that was a comma issue. And it was just like clerical issues that demonstrated that like maybe this process was rushed and could be done better. Mm-hmm. If you turn in a term paper that you stayed up all night
with
working
like
on.
Grammatical errors
right.
and missing periods.
Maybe you're not
like,
doing your best work, right? So this year the Senate said, we're going to slow it down. We're going to start earlier. We're going to have more meetings. They're going to be open, where the Appropriations and Budget Committee would meet. Okay. Just in the Senate side, though, right? So they're having these meetings. It's bipartisan to the extent that anything happened. There were Democrats in the room, is what
to
I mean.
To a certain extent,
right.
Yes.
They were invited to be present.
No, we got an invite, but, you know, doesn't mean we can... Not really a whole lot you can do sometimes.
Yeah. And especially from like leadership, they had good comments though. And Leader Floyd, Kay Floyd in the Senate had said that the Democrat leader in the Senate, in the news I've seen her saying like, this process is good. It is more transparent. She's terming out and has been the part of the process for a long time. And it's pretty measured for her to say like, this is good. And
yeah,
improvement.
No. Yeah. She definitely has a good opinion because she has the experience of all of the years beforehand that probably weren't that great. And
right.
Now she can attest to the changes that we've made so far.
Exactly. So the big criticism with this is that it has been only the Senate, right? So there's the House has kind of taken offense to this, being like, well, they're talking about a budget and they're not even inviting us. Like, we haven't even been there. And this is just under the dome politics, right? So the Senate's like, hey, we're going to have our committee meetings, you know, and we're going to talk about this. Normally, like, they don't always invite the other chamber over for their committee meetings because they each have their own thing. And the House could have done the same process.
Of course,
they just chose not to. It's their own rules. Leader Eccles, in an interview with NonDoc, he laughed and said, I have no comment about the Senate's budget process. The result of this is not yet an actual budget. The result of this is that the Senate is likely to come back here in the next week or so and pass a resolution. So they've passed that out of committee. It'll have to go to the whole floor. So it'll be a non-binding resolution. So not a bill, but just like, hey, here's essentially like, here's the Senate's budget proposal.
Okay.
They're going to pass that and then send that to the House. And then they said, we will start negotiating with the House in earnest.
Yeah.
And so it's, once again, like the politics between the two chambers is always funny to me, where it's like, y'all work in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on. Everybody knows that the Senate's doing one thing, the House is doing something different. But then to complain about it in the press, it's like, what's this? Isn't a surprise. And if you don't like it, like, talk to them or do it a different way. I am someone, I don't know about you, Ava, but I'm someone that is a proponent of transparency.
Of course, yes.
In almost every way with the government. We could, this is like a very small step in the right direction. They could still do a lot more.
Oh, of course. There's many, many things that can be done. But, you know, we got to
take what we can get.
That's right, yeah.
It's 1%, you know.
Take what you get and you don't throw a fit.
Yes.
What we know about the Senate's resolution, or like what's in there, is that basically every agency will be flat funded, which we kind of anticipated.
Okay.
They said that, you know, there's at least 10 agencies that have requested additional funding. So we'll see.
Gesundheit.
So the House said there's at least like 10 agencies that requested some additional money for their budgets. So we'll see what happens. Senator Roger Thompson, who's chair of the A&B committee, and I guess someone else who's terming out this year, he said some of those supplemental requests, such as funding the Attorney General's office and the DA's council, have been included in their budget spreadsheet. And that's the other thing. The Senate had it, had like a spreadsheet on the projector, like a huge spreadsheet showing it all, which they don't normally do ever.
Yeah.
So that was helpful. And so he said, oh, yeah, we've got some of those like additional requests built in. Kevin Wallace, who's the A&B chair in the House, said that, you know, it definitely doesn't. So I think a resolution definitely doesn't fund an agency or give supplemental appropriate. Well, no, a resolution doesn't do anything. It's just a resolution. It's not a bill. So I think there's some differences there. So over the next couple of months, what we'll see is these two chambers have to come together and hash out a budget that everybody agrees on, and then it has to go to the governor for his signature. Now, in the past, the last couple of years, I think the governor either vetoed the budget or declined to sign and then like thereby allowed it to go into effect without his signature. And in the times that he vetoed it, I think this legislature came back and like overrode the veto. So to the extent that the governor's office participates, it is often as a courtesy lately and not, again, not like not negotiated in good faith, which is a shame. Like I would think the executive branch, as the branch that oversees all the agencies, could and should have a better, more active seat at the table.
Yeah. It's definitely kind of pushed aside a little bit.
Yeah. Well, aside from the legislative process, a couple of other things that I wanted to highlight. One is conversation about immigration. So listeners, you probably have seen the news about the bill in Texas. So the Texas legislature passed a law, Senate Bill 4 is what it's called down there, that basically allows local law enforcement to arrest individuals who are undocumented in the United States. And the U.S. The U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is supposed to hear oral arguments on April 3rd. And the whole issue here is that the there was thought that the U.S. Supreme Court might step in and rule on it, and they decided earlier this week, last week, the Supreme Court ruled that the bill was constitutional. So a lower court has said it's unconstitutional. They appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. U.S. Supreme Court said, nope, it's fine, go ahead. And then it came back, and so now the the Fifth Circuit supposed to hear arguments. Eventually, it'll have to be resolved in a federal court in Austin, where the lawsuits were originally filed. And I guess, let me back up. The U.S. Supreme Court did not actually rule whether the law is constitutional or not. It just said that the appeals court didn't follow the right steps when it reversed the judge's order blocking. So the Supreme Court like ruled on an aspect of the dispute, but not on the merits of the case itself.
Yeah.
It was like a process, not a policy decision.
Yeah.
Anyway, amidst all of this, there's clearly something happening at our southern border of Mexico. And this has been going on for decades. It's certainly higher, more pronounced in the last years. And even from, I think when you watch the news from any news source, there is like clearly something evident here that our immigration system is broken.
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah.
Well, let me talk about Oklahoma first and then we'll come back. Yesterday, Attorney General Gittner Drummond, let's play our Drummond music, issued a press release that he was calling on the legislature to do something, saying that, you know, every state, county, and local law enforcement know all too well the impact of the nation's porous border. The Biden administration has failed to secure our border, leaving us to suffer with the consequences. If the federal government won't do its job, then it's imperative that Oklahoma be allowed to protect our citizens. So it was a lot of like anti-Biden, like we got to do what we can do, this ongoing border crisis, blah, blah, blah. And so he is basically like asking the state legislature to act quickly this session to pass a measure allowing state law enforcement to arrest illegal immigrants. There's all kinds of problems with that type of legislation, just as there is in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Because how do you know someone is undocumented? Like, there's just lots of...
Yes, there's lots of holes in that process that you are not, like, easily resolvable by, you know, some police officer, some Texas Ranger.
Right,
you know?
Right. Oklahoma Highway Patrol or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, shortly after Drummond filed or published that... statement yesterday, Speaker McCall also had sent out a statement saying he was going to immediately file legislation to do just this. I think this is one man's opinion, but mm-hmm. I suspect that we know that both of these fellows are planning to run for governor in 2026, or we suspect. No one's announced yet. This is just like...
Yes, just speculation.
Right. Yeah. Speculation and like rampant rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, right, like if these two fellows are both running, if mm-hmm. one does something that says I'm tough on immigration, then the other one is going to do it as well, right? Like,
oh, of course.
Because that helps like level the playing field between them.
Mm-hmm.
And also for the AG to say I'm calling the legislature to do this doesn't actually do anything. It's just him saying that.
Yeah, it's just him saying, you know, him trying to make some sort of influence.
Yeah, and same thing with McCall, right? Yeah. Like, McCall saying he's going to file a bill in the middle of session, right? Bill filing was, like, in December and January. But because he's leadership, he can file a bill tomorrow. But that doesn't mean that bill's going to go anywhere, necessarily.
Yeah.
It might, and this might be a big hot-button issue right here at the middle of session that serves as a distraction from something else, too. I'm not saying that it necessarily will, but when we're talking about the budget coming and then a big hot button issue comes up, sometimes I wonder, like, what else is going on here? We got to be, as public, got to stay vigilant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He won't be the first and he will not be the last to do it.
Yeah.
If he does.
For sure. So we'll see that. But I think if nothing else, immigration needs to be addressed. There's lots to it. I'm not even going to start that conversation today. But also, this might be one of the more clear signs that the 2026 gubernatorial race is already kicking off.
Oh, yes.
I don't want to say that, right? But listeners can't see.
It's definitely kickstarting, for sure.
Yeah. Ava grimaced very visibly when I said that. But speaking of elections and people running for office, listeners, in just a couple of weeks. It'll be candidate filing time. Candidate filing this year is April 3rd through 5th. If you are planning to run for really anything, state legislature, county elections, I don't think any municipal ones are for this, but all the ones that will be on the ballot in November, it is filing season. If you've been thinking about it, haven't quite made a decision on what to do, if you are going to file, if you're going to run or not, I don't know, reach out to us. We can help connect you with someone that might be a little more in the lane that you're looking for, to provide some guidance. But in the past, right, like 70% of the legislature has been elected almost by default because they were unchallenged. A lot of our legislature, more than half of the state legislature, gets reelected just by filing because no one else files against them. You can look up, you know, election history, all that kind of stuff online. It's all free. Ballotpedia has tons of information about your legislators' past election history, who their challengers were, what their filing looked like. There are some new requirements for running for office. So you have to, a new law, it was Senate Bill 677 that passed last year, I believe. If you're filing for state or county office, it requires you to submit your voter registration verification form along with your declaration of candidacy to ensure you meet all the requirements. When you file, there's like a packet of stuff that's on the election board website that really tells you everything you need to do. You can just follow that. You can obtain those forms from your county election board or the state election board. This does not apply for federal offices. So if anyone out there is planning to run for Congress, that's a separate process. That's governed by federal law, not state law. And then as we get into April, there'll be some fun details that I enjoy about the candidate filing process. One is who's going to file. Like, we know some folks who are not seeking reelection. Senator Joe Newhouse in Tulsa is not. Senator George Young in Oklahoma City is not. There are several folks terming out. So those are open seats. So that'd be a big question mark about who files for those seats. There's, again, a lot of folks that have not been challenged for the last several terms. Maybe they will be this year. In particular, on speaking of folks terming out, Speaker McCall, Pro Tem Treat, Leader Eccles, A and B chairs, I think in both chambers, like a lot of leadership terms out. So that opens those seats.
Yeah.
Especially for Senator Treat's seat here in Oklahoma City. It's in like the northwest part of the city, like West Edmond, super far north, like Kilpatrick Turnpike, Mercy Hospital area up there.
Yeah.
As Oklahoma County has become more purple the last few cycles, it'll be very interesting to see. I'm sure in an open seat there, it'll be contested by members of both parties.
Yes.
We'll see what happens there. Yeah. Pro Tem Treat's wife was just elected at the county level. And so I don't think she's going to run for that, but there's always some rumors that she might. But also really curious who else might and what that looks like. I know there's at least one Democrat running already. I'm sure there'll be some others. You see challenges even in safe Republican and safe Democratic seats. Sometimes they get challenged from members of their own party because they don't feel like they are, you know, extreme enough on whatever side, and or not doing a good job. So we'll see what happens there. So that's April 3rd through 5th. Then the next week, once everyone's filed, all the candidates and everybody else starts digging in.
Yes.
And you might find someone whose candidacy seems suspicious. Like, you think, wait a minute, they don't actually live in that district, or they are unqualified for some other reason. So there will be challenges to candidate qualifications. Those can be filed on April 8th and 9th, and the hearings for those will be April 18th and 19th. I always like watching the hearings. There's always some that end up resulting in very like weird witnesses being called to like, there was a few years ago, someone who it seemed pretty clear that he didn't actually live like even in the state, like he might live just across the border in like Colorado, but he like had his ex-wife come. It was all kinds of people like, well, I saw him at this bar, and it's like a really...
Yeah, that's really weird.
It should be like more cut and dry. Like, yes. Which, but if you've got a house and you've got a hunting property or you've got a couple of pieces of land...
It's easy to go through loopholes like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It can be done, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. Some people like have a lake house, but they live in the city and then they run for the rural seat.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's laws or rules governing that, but it's always interesting to watch that. So we'll, I don't know, we'll pay attention to that, see if there's anything. If you, voters need to change your party affiliation, you've got just over a week to do it. You cannot change your party affiliation from April 1st to April 30, or excuse me, April 1st to August 31st. That's like the primary season, right? So that includes the filing, the primary in June, and the primary runoff in August. All of that like partisan activity, you can file a party change, but it won't be effective until after August. So if you, I don't know, if you were planning to register as a Republican so you could vote in Republican primaries, but you want to change it back to independent or something afterwards, this is your notice. You've got between now and April 1st to file your party change. And this is important because Oklahoma has closed primaries, right? So in June, only Republicans can vote in the Republican primaries. Only Libertarians can vote in Libertarian primaries, if there are any. And then Independents and Democrats can vote in... Well, Democrats can only vote in the Democratic primary, and Independents can only vote in the Democratic primary. So depending on where you live, if you're trying to strategize around this, there's some considerations. So we'll see what happens. It's election years are always... A big question mark, I think, as we move through the year. All right. Well, I think that's about it. Oh, speaking of open primaries, though, I'll end on this, Ava. Oklahoma Voice has an excellent article today from Barbara Hoberock about open primaries. She talks to members of both parties. She talks to our colleagues at Oklahoma United for Progress, Margaret Kobos, who has been kind of leading the charge around open primaries and the discussion about what Oklahoma should do, how we could open primaries. And the article ends with a quote from Fount Holland, who is a known like Republican strategist that talks about like things are different when you're running for office versus when you're governing, right? And I think that awareness, even from a Republican campaign consultant, is important. So I will link to that article in the show notes for anyone who is interested. If you have questions about anything legislature related, legislative session related, please send us an email at podcast@letsfixthis.org. We'd be happy to receive that, and we will respond as quickly as we can to answer those questions or get you pointed in the right direction. Again, if you're looking to run for office, it's April 3rd through 5th. If you have questions about that, please reach out as well. Happy to get you connected with the right folks for that. For the rest of us, if you're not running for office and if you feel pretty convinced about, you know how the general process works, but you want to help other folks get involved, the name of the game right now is voter registration, right? We, there should be mailers landing today in about 28,000 homes in Oklahoma. There's the Voter Participation Center has been trying to help unregistered folks get registered. So if you or someone you know received mail from the Voter Participation Center that includes a voter registration form, that means that at least based on the best records they can find, someone in your household or at your address might be unregistered. If that's you or someone you know, again, I don't know how you found our podcast if you're unregistered to vote, but maybe it's your kid, maybe it's your son, it's your spouse. Get them registered, right? You can fill out the form they've got. You can go to their portal. You can go to our website. You can go to letsfixthis.org/vote for tons of information. We'll be adding more and more information throughout the year, including a lot of like how-tos about how to vote. I think often there's this gap, like we register folks and we just turn them loose.
Yep.
And they expect to know what to do, where to go, and how to do it.
Yes.
Especially younger students. Yeah. Or younger kids, I guess you could say.
Well, even recently, they moved my polling place. And so when I voted on Super Tuesday earlier mm-hmm. this month, it was my first time to vote. I think second time to vote in that location. Mm-hmm. And I still was like, where do I go? And like, is it only my precinct now? Or is there two precincts here? And like, trying to like check in, it's all a little bit different. And I'll be honest, for the first few elections in Oklahoma, I just checked the box because people say, just check the box. Mm-hmm. You have to color in. It's like a Scantron. Yes, you have to
fill it in. Yeah. No, it is. We need to have a set up in-depth explanation for like exactly how to approach that. Because I went and voted the first time by myself, and I went to the college across the street where my polling place was. And I just walked in there and asked everybody like 30 million questions. Yeah. I was like, I'm sorry, this is my first time voting.
Yeah.
It's like, I just need a little help. I'm sorry.
I'm sure they were very excited to help you too.
Oh, they were just wonderful. Anytime I mentioned that, you know, I'm a new voter, a recent voter, everybody's like, oh, the new generation. So excited.
Right. Because usually the polling workers are older folks. And so they're always excited.
Yes.
Listeners, again, if you would like to be a poll worker, just reach out to your county election board. Just Google your county election board and call them or email them and say, I want to help. And they'll help get you in the pipeline to be trained and you can be a poll worker. That would be great.
We always need them. Always, always, always.
Yeah. Have you ever been a poll worker?
Yes, I have. And my grandmother is a poll worker at the Garfield County Election Board.
All right.
So every time that they have, you know, an election there, for whatever reason, her and my grandfather up there people vote.
Nice. So, that's exciting. I love seeing the familial connection there.
Oh, it's deep.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Always hope it's helpful. Listeners, thanks for being here. Ava, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Next week, the legislature will be back in session. We will probably have an episode next week. I will be out of town for a few days. Scott and I might record a remote episode in D.C. Maybe we'll do an episode when we get back. And we've got some guests lined up for the rest of the spring about some of these bills and these topics. It should be informative, helpful. If this episode or any are helpful to you or enjoyable, please feel free to share our podcast with your friends. And then if you could go on to Apple or Spotify and rate our podcast, that helps us float to the top of the algorithm for others who might be looking for Oklahoma politics podcasts. There's two or three folks out there who I think are interested in that, and we appreciate both of you. All right. On that note, have a good weekend. Oh, and decisions are made by those who show up. Thanks a lot.